made a dire Christmas a bit better for people who were fighting on two different sides during the First World War. Let's go on a journey filled with light. In pagan times, holly was thought to be a male plant, and ivy, a female one. An old tradition from the Midlands says that whatever one was brought into the home first over winter indicates whether the man or the woman would rule the roost that year. The only rule was that neither could be brought in before Christmas Eve. That kind of explains the hecticness around Christmas Eve. Who's going to get in there first, the holly or the ivy? Holly goes back to the Druids, who hung it on the windows and door jambs to fend off evil witches and spirits. It's known for its vibrant red color, which stands out against the darkness and is considered to bring good luck and protection. In our Christian tradition, the leaves represent the crown of thorns, and the berries are the blood that was shed when the thorns pricked Jesus' head. As mentioned previously, ivy is the female counterpart to holly. In Germany, it is traditional that ivy is only used outside of a place where it is supposed to protect the building from being struck by lightning. Okay, that's kind of interesting. The interesting thing about ivy is that it must cling to something to support itself as it grows. This reminds us that we need to cling to God and to others for support in our lives, even today. Now, mistletoe. Mistletoe is a plant that grows on a tree, including willow, apple, and oak trees. And did you know that we actually have mistletoe in Alberta? I'm sure someone brought it over from somewhere else, but it's actually so parasitic that it actually kills the tree that it adheres to. It's not a symbiotic relation, the mistletoe in Alberta. So that is, yeah, it's what happens when we as humans try to mess with nature. We kind of mess things up. But anyways, the tradition of hanging mistletoe goes back to the ancient Druids. Its mystical power supposedly bring good luck to the household and also warded off evil spirits. It was also used as a sign of love and friendship in Norse mythology. And that's where the custom of kissing under the mistletoe came from. And another interesting thing about kissing under the mistletoe is that the mistletoe, since it's a live plant, if it's cut, it will die. That's what plants do when they're cut. Now, the tradition is that once the mistletoe dies, there's no more kissing under the mistletoe. So you got to get your kisses in really, really early if you're going to kiss under the mistletoe for your good luck. So let us sing one verse, verse 1, winter solstice party celebrated over much of Europe long before the birth of Christ. Yule was the darkest time of the year. People celebrated because days were starting to get longer after the solstice, as we are experiencing that now. The Yule log was symbolic of the sun's emergence from its southern reaches and the land's rebirth. Now, the Yule log was originally a whole tree. The big end would be put in the fireplace, and the tree would feed the fire through the 12 days of Christmas, which means it would fill up the living room, which seems a little weird to me, but some traditions are really weird. And if there was any of the tree left over, it would be protected and saved to start the fire for the next year. So again, it's the continuation of life, continuing year after year after year. And I'm thinking that there's a distinct possibility that they would make sure that the tree didn't burn completely so that they would have a start for the next year, just to continue the circle of life that always is going on. Now, the Christmas tree. In Germany, the first trees were decorated with edible things, such as gingerbread and gold-covered apples. Then, glassmakers made special small ornaments similar to the decorations used today. At first, a figure of Jesus was put on top of the tree. Over time, it changed to an angel that told the shepherds about Jesus, or a star like the wise men saw. This could be a transition that began with the Yule log. So it kind of just morphed into something different. So the tree was still in the living room, but it wasn't filling up the whole living room, just one corner. Possibly a big corner, but one corner. Now, the first Christmas tree in England may have been set up by Queen Charlotte. She was the German wife of King George III. Another story is that Queen Victoria started a Christmas tree tradition to help her beloved Prince Albert feel more at home in England. They're both very, very romantic stories, which is pretty cool. And we continue to embrace the Christmas tree to this day because of the festiveness and the joy that it brings to our lives. Let's sing Deck the Halls, verse 2. People know the song Silent Night. I expect everyone's hand to go up. Okay, good. How many people know the story of Silent Night? Okay, a few people do. Good. So, I'm going to tell you the story of Silent Night. Now, this song, well, the words to this song were written long before the music was actually composed to it. It was written in Germany a long time ago. I don't have the year, and it doesn't really matter. But what happened was, there are two different stories, and I'm going to give you the one that I think is the romantic one. There was a pipe organ, much like the pipe organ in Tewinton. If anyone's been in Tewinton, they've heard the pipe organ. And it was close to Christmas Eve. And the minister decided, okay, well, we've got to get this Christmas service done because it's close to Christmas Eve, so we got to get our stuff, we got to get our acting gear here. So he goes to the church, and he's going to check out the organ because you can't have Christmas Eve without that beautiful pipe organ. And he goes in, and he tries to play it, and it's dead. And he says, what the heck? What's going on here? It worked fine last Sunday. What the heck? And he went, and he looked underneath. He crawled underneath the organ, and he noticed that the bellows had been chewed through. He said, gol darn mice. They chewed through the bellows of the organ. What am I going to do? Christmas Eve is coming. I don't know what to do. And then he thought, well, you know, I have these words that I wrote months ago. Months and months ago. You know, they're really, really pretty words. And our organist is a fantastic musician. I'm betting that he could write something for this. But I can't use the organ. What are we going to do? So anyways, he goes and talks to Franz, his musician. And Franz looks at the words and he says, you know what? This is such a beautiful piece, words, that I can fit this around a guitar. No problem. I can fit this around a guitar. And he did. He put the words to Silent Night, or Stille Nacht, if you pronounce German properly, which I don't. And the song Silent Night was born. And that song is probably just about 90% of the world's favorite song is the song Silent Night. So we are going to sing. You can stay seated for Silent Night if you want. Back in 1914, there's a war. Huge, the First World War, the war to end all wars. Well, that didn't work, but starting on Christmas Eve, many German and British troops fighting in World War I sang Christmas carols to each other. One of these carols was most likely Silent Night, since its simplicity makes it very singable. Plus, it was originally written in Germany, and the war was with Germans, so it would be very logical that they would sing Silent Night, because everyone knows Silent Night. Let's listen to this story, but we're going to listen to it in a different way. We're going to listen to Paul Rumbold singing.